Hello everyone, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have a special interview for you with author, Waldorf teacher, and geoengineering researcher Ilana Freeland. Ilana's breakthrough new book, Geoengineered Transhumanism, How the Environment Has Been Weaponized by Chemicals, Electromagnetism, and Nanotechnology for Synthetic Biology, lays out the battle that humanity faces versus the transhumanist forces, who have created a global control grid for full spectrum dominance.
Those people who have crossed over into the transhuman category, they will no longer qualify for human rights. That's over.
Please join us now. Been part of a long process. You've studied that process, and we've been looking at it since, you know, let's say over the 40s and 50s and so on. The stage that it's at, though, is this kind of culmination stage, which is why you can see that 800-pound gorilla stomping around. What does that pose for this decade? You know, because you see them talking about in relation to this war, for example, there's very free talk about nuclear exchange. And we know if you study that properly, once the 80s hit, they were already beyond nuclear, whatever they were doing. But where is the stage that they're kind of leading us into here? You've seen them with the incredible control of the environment. And it seems like making these people, as you said, into towers inside of this Internet of Things, that seems to be where this is going. So it's a kind of AI enslavement. Is that the right term?
Yes, of the transhumans. I mean, right. The transhuman is a very big deal. So first of all, in this decade, those people who have crossed over into the transhuman category, they will no longer qualify for human rights. That's over. That's right. A patent. It's legal, and they can be proven with some sort of genetic test to not be human anymore. The nuclear radiation, when people talk about nuclear war, etc., you know what these people don't want is they do not want their precious infrastructure tainted. They want to be able to do precision targeting, you know, and no touch torture. They want it antiseptic, and they want it exceedingly controlled. So nuclear devastation. The only advantage to them of a nuclear devastation, say in Ukraine or something, would be that now they have another lab for what they can do to the people who survive and see what the radiation does. That's how I see the Fukushima release in 2011 was, it was all about, well, not all, but greatly about releasing it into the atmosphere and the water in order to see, in order to quicken development of certain things in the atmosphere that had been dumped in, right, for about two decades by then. So this radiation, whether it's ionized or non-ionized, the non-ionized, I think we can see quite well, because all these technologies I've pretty much named all are in use as non-ionized, i.e. they don't create a lot of heat. Well, right. Once they get in the body, they create heat. But of course, they're not thinking about that. They're thinking about outside the body for all of their military specs. But radiation could be very useful to them. It is not ever, in my opinion, whether they're practicing Satanists or simply bent left-handed brotherhoods, shadow brotherhoods, as Rudolf Steiner called them, I just can't see that they would blatantly, like a teenage kid, just want to destroy for destruction's sake. I think that they perceive themselves as being real rational people, and that they have certain projects in mind that they will be known for throughout history, in quiet histories, in histories that lay people will not have access to, because those definitely exist. That's kind of how I see when people bring up the depopulation. I think, yes, I think culling is always on their mind, but they'd like to be able to use those people before they're culled. And now they have the perfect means, because I'm telling you, if they send the kill switch remotely, that's it.
That's it, yeah.
That's it. That's what this software and hardware, and then, by the way, they call us wetware. I assume you know that, wetware.
Yes.
They send the kill switch and lights out. Their other problem, of course, with a depopulation is it's kind of like, yeah, you kill everybody here, and then they all excarnate, and then they come back.
Right.
So where's the solution?
Yeah.
Because these are brotherhoods. They know reincarnation is real, whereas most people don't realize that in the West.
Right.
So it reminds me of that story, which I know you know, of Caspar Hauser back in the 19th century,
Oh, yeah.
when this scion of a royal house in the Austro-Hungarian Empire was kidnapped at birth, and a dead child put in its place, and the family told that their child had died. And then he was, instead of killed, he was raised in a crawl space. Horrible thing. Not really ever standing on his legs, but crawling, and was visited daily with his bread and water. And he was kept that way till he was 17 years old. Now, this is all documented. This is not some fairy tale from the Black Forest. And then he was allowed to come out, and even with a name, Caspar Hauser, which was not his real birth name, but is a wonderful, who did it? Werner Herzog did that.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's a great movie.
Oh, it's a great film.
Yeah.
And it's a great story, because many of the Rudolf Steiner Europeans feel that had Caspar Hauser, the individual called Caspar Hauser, been able to be in his royal family and eventually become a potentate, that he would have made a very different Europe today.
Interesting.
And that's what they didn't want. They did not want Europe to go that way. And these brotherhoods are extraordinary, whether they're good or bad, in that they have access to means of figuring out who you've been and who you will be, and all that that I
Right.
don't have at all, really. So with that with that in mind, the Caspar Hauser was released, and then he was allowed to live a few years, and then he was killed. I think it was an experiment, just like they're running experiments now. Brotherhoods are always running experiments with clueless human beings. And so again, depopulation, if they change the human being and the human being no longer is evolving as a human being, but maybe is a semi-hybrid of transhumanism, well then, will those people's souls remain untouched? No, not at all. Because the relationship between the human soul and the body that we live in while we're here, Well, that's a very big deal. And so that's what I think's going on. That kind of experimentation is the level that I think is the important part. The fact that many people will die, I know I'm going to sound ruthless and heartless, and it is hard if it's in your family and someone you know, but death itself is just a door to another room. But if you're not human anymore, well, then maybe all bets are off, and I don't really know what that means. That's the thing I'm watching.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you in the book, you bring up the Funvax video and the whole kind of destroying the God consciousness via a scientific medical process. And this is very interesting because Steiner alludes to this as well. He says, you know, you're seeing that as part of a whole broad program, though. In a sense, the outcome of all this is that what you end up with is not a human being as we understand it.
No, not to me. I mean, again, we all now have the opportunity to sit and have a good contemplation over what being human means to us. And if we are, if we believe, as I do, that we are involved in a divine process of evolution, and that when we enter as babies, yes, we are human as a sort of little prototype, definitely human, up till now anyway, and now begins the various levels of consciousness that we're going to have to make our way through, all the way from, oh, I'm born in this place. Oh, I'm born in this family. Oh, I'm born in this race. Oh, I'm born in this gender. Oh, I'm born in... So, you know, each of these layers, our consciousness as a human being has to penetrate, think about it, figure out, you know, this, that, and the other. And then we have our work, because I believe, I don't know that, I assume everyone has a destiny, but I don't know if that's true. I think there might be quite a few humans, and Steiner indicates there are people here who are not really human, but certainly are very drawn to becoming human,
right,
and want to go through the paradigm of a human life and having human friends and human relatives and human this and that. So, you know, I mean, it depends how out there you want to get about how to think of what being human is. But if we are evolving, then I certainly do not want to be controlled remotely by 5G, 6G systems bringing in all sorts of others' agendas.
Right.
Into my life and making me either, like most targeted individuals I know, they start out feeling crazy. They start out thinking they're demon possessed. They start out thinking they're fantasizing. And it takes them sometimes 2-3 years before they go, wait a minute, this could be technology that's making me this way. And they don't have anyone to talk to because, you know, if they talk to their parents may call the psychiatrist, and then you end up in a mental hospital, and, you know, you'll be diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic, wrong diagnosis. It's a very dangerous thing. And so if it can be done, and I think this is what they're trying to see that they can do it without you noticing that you are being taken over. I mean, some people write me who say, oh, yeah, I had this terrible thought of killing my whatever. I don't think those things. What is that? And I immediately say, well, yeah, that's what can happen. So you need to know the technology to some degree.
Absolutely. And that makes me think of these stories that we've seen where people have backtracked, and it has to do with the whole voice to skull technology, which the military's used for years. And the idea that that would get into a kind of a regular currency targeting domestic enemies is something that, you know, would seem very far out to an average person. And yet there are examples of it. And if you're in circles like the kind of circles that we're in at times, you hear about it. And from people who've gone through it for years, what's a good definition of voice to skull?
I have a really good one, but it's written down. And do I have it at all memorized? Well, it's where it's a microwave hearing.
Right.
Microwave hearing goes all the way back to 1970. You send a carrier wave with a frequency on it that bypasses your ears and goes straight to the brain. And then if they have your evoked potential, it's a very important term, Daniel. If they have your evoked potential, and they usually gain these, according to Dr. Robert Duncan, a victim and creator of this technology, that usually is done by satellite. If they have your evoked potential, then they can immediately set up a conversation with you and start laying down what the AI system is saying, what an actual human operator on a monitor is saying to you. And now you are in the voice hearing category. One of the things that I thought might not be such a bad idea is how people have these earbuds and they have wireless iPhones and they're all walking down the street. Sounds like they're talking to themselves, but you're they're right. Talking to someone on their device,
yeah.
Which is, you know, is certainly not what I'm talking about with the voice to skull, but it looks like it. So a lot of people are hearing voices. Now, next step will be they won't need the device, and they'll be hearing voices that they've plugged into a transmission. Maybe they've activated something with their brain, and now they're hearing it. It's very similar. It's very similar because no one else nearby will hear it. It's microwave hearing. Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. You could implant suggestions in a person. So a voice-to-skull microwave hearing situation, you could then place suggestions in a person's mind. And eventually it just becomes maybe the best kind of mind control.
Yeah, and I don't know even if it's suggestions. That's kind of too light a word. Directives would be better.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you are being targeted, whether you know it or not, you will have seen that if you don't do what the directives tell you, you will be in pain.
Right.
There's some part of you that knows that. And so, you know, that's the key to targeted individuals is they initially try to please this voice and do what it says. But then they find out that that doesn't really fly very far, and they'll still be in pain, and they'll still be tortured. So really, the recommendation of most targeted individuals is, you know, to resist, and even though it hurts. And that's, you know, that's the disposition of, I would conservatively say, of at least 1.5 million people in the United States. I know there's got to be more, but I think this latest with the satellites up, the 5G satellites, and by the way, notice that I always say 5G, 6G. That's very important.
Yeah.
A lot of people think it's only 5G and we don't have 6G yet. That's not true. All 5G systems are in tandem with 6G systems. It has to be, because they are beginning the penetration of all brains. And that's the penetration will require 6G, because the 5G, yes, it does penetrate, unlike the lies you've been told, but it doesn't penetrate deeply enough. Mm-hmm. So it will need the boost the power boost of the 6G system. So, you know, my question as a conscious person who is attempting to keep my consciousness very pure or relatively pure, given that I have a weapon system right here that I'm talking to you through, my lovely computer. I can't do without it. It's a weapon system I have to have. Can we develop a consciousness that can penetrate, can, I don't want to use the word resist, but be some sort of a wall between us and the pulsing of, say, our population around us? Right. And that could be, they could easily do an Ilana Freeland pulse if they have my evoke potential, which I believe they do, but they're not doing that right now. So I have to assume that the work I'm doing, a lot of people think I'm very brave, etc. I don't know how brave I am. It's not a question that I really think about. I have to do this. There's no question. It's sort of on a mission level. But I don't worry about the bad boys. I know that I am not in charge of how long my life will last. I really don't believe I am. But it doesn't matter, does it? What matters is the quality of the life I live while I'm here. And that includes fulfilling to the best of my ability the missions that lie before me. I mean, Daniel, you may feel a little bit like that because you're doing similar work and you're aware of similar dark side.
No question. And I think it is amazing, though, when you think about the books that you've put out, because they've had an incredible jump on events. That is, if you go back and look at the books you put out 2014 and beyond, they're presaging all the things that we're living in. And so, you know, not only are you giving this kind of encyclopedic overview of these various things, I think what's interesting about the latest book, and it is very comprehensive, it's your greatest book, in my opinion, but it includes that section about occult control. And for me, that's important because, you know, even something like what we were talking about with Voice to Skull, it's a process, like a mechanical process. And, you know, it's very interesting to say, what are the telltale signs of that? How could you know you were targeted with that kind of a thing if you were a political dissident, for example? But the occult thing is really invisible because not many people are aware of it at all.
Right. Are you talking about the chapter in which I talk about the brain?
Yes.
Yeah, because the other occult part of the book is in my mindsets.
Yes.
Appendix, where I talk about Satanism and the military. I mean, these mindsets that are invisible are important to realize what we're up against. You know, it's not just stuff. It's not just technology that's PhD level. But no, I love that chapter on the brain. And of course, I owe it to some amazing Rudolf Steiner people that I've read who have done a great deal in that area to understand how this amazing brain works. I mean, the very seat of the pineal gland being what they're trying to destroy in us in Six Ways to Sunday with fluoride, in order so that we do not have that natural doorway into the spiritual world. I mean, you know, these are, and I put that chapter in there, Daniel, to say to people, you think you know what a human being is? You think it's just a higher ape? Let me tell you, this is an order beyond that. And it isn't that every human being manifests that higher order, because it's a lot of work and you have to be very disciplined. And and the word disciple is the word discipline. So, okay, so it's rare, but it's all there. We've all got the antecedents of becoming a great human being with free will. But now we have, obviously, an anti-human enemy of some sort. And we now need to really look at the technology. And I really like how Steiner looks at technology, because he's not limited to, oh, it's physical. It's all physical. Yes, it is very material. It is very physical. It is made out of matter. But take the nanotechnology, for example, atomic level. When was the last time we were hearing about atomic level science? Oh, yeah, it was the Manhattan Project back in the 30s and 40s that led to the atomic bomb. And, you know, decades of terror in civilians that they were going to be bombed by, you know, these terrible weapons. Yeah, okay, so the atomic level, now we're right down by the quantum threshold. And the quantum threshold, as we know, last I heard the military is aware of, I can't remember if it's 12, 13, 14 dimensions, different dimensions, but there are many more. And the quantum level is what CERN dealt with, and probably still does. I haven't checked on CERN lately because my CERN man, I'm not in touch with him anymore, Anthony Patch. Wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful, yes. Connection.
They just fired up the new one.
Yes, the revised one, yeah. Wasn't it revised, not new?
Oh, it's expanded.
Expanded, yes.
And I know that the budget went from $6 billion to $20 billion. I thought that was remarkable.
Yeah. Gee, it's just science. It has nothing to do with us, right? So that quantum veil that has been in place for many, many millennia regarding to protect human development, I believe, is being taken down now. And right. So we now are encountering all sorts of dimensions, beings from those dimensions too, who are not subject to physical bodies like we are. They have different ways of manifesting. And so we get to expand our consciousness now and start, you know, digging our way out of scientism, which wants to convince us that everything is just material, like Madonna sang, you know, as if they were all singing Madonna's song. And we realize that Rudolf Steiner was able to really paint a very thorough picture of spirit and matter being in the same area. So when you are talking about electromagnetic, the weaponizing of electromagnetic waves, what is riding in on those waves? Is it just the waves? Well, they're bad enough, but what if there was a conscious entity from one of those quantum dimensions riding in on this electromagnetic? What if the nanotechnology, when it swarms and has this swarm consciousness, what if that too is some sort of entity from one of those quantum dimensions? I mean, are we really scientists or not? We have to consider these things.
Right.
We can't just say because yesterday was X, well, tomorrow will be X. That's not going to happen. That's already not happening, if you can recognize it.
Right.
So when you say that I'm sort of ahead of the game, it's just the way my mind works, because I have studied some remarkable things that all sort of talk to each other. And then I'm able to see what is probable, and then I see how it goes. And I have to admit that everything that's coming out regarding the, for example, the inoculation, I definitely was on it. I definitely was on it. Some things are not so important. I didn't make them so important in that section. Some things are important. I did make them important in that section. So I have to attribute that not just to Ilana as such a sharp cookie. No, I have to say that the spiritual world that gave me the mission in the first place is definitely behind me. No question.
You know, I wanted to ask you about Steiner and Ahriman. I want to get into that and how it relates to what we're seeing. I had a question just before we get there, a little aside from something in the book, and it had to do with something that you said about MKUltra assassins. And you noted a few of them, including the assassin of John Lennon, Mark David Chapman, and how they complained very often about intense stomach problems.
Yes, the stomach clairvoyance.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
Well, I talk about it in that brain chapter, the occult chapter, as you call it, the stomach clairvoyance. The solar plexus, as we know from martial arts, Eastern martial arts, is a very powerful energy vortex, toroid, I would call it. It's a toroid. Mm-hmm. So entities coming in and going out, often the people that they're doing that with will have stomach problems. And so
like almost demonic possession.
Oh, yes, very much. And that has to do with what I was just saying about the electromagnetic. So say it's electromagnetically that, let's say Mark David Chapman is electromagnetically on a leash. And I believe he was. That's the old mind control. And so they send out a wave, carrier wave, with some sort of frequency on it to kill John Lennon or whatever. And right away, Mark feels this pain in his stomach. Well, that's the microwave coming in, the carrier wave. But what's on the carrier wave? What else is coming in? Because, you know, certainly with electromagnetics, we know with radiation, is it a particle or is it a wave, right? We have this. Well, it's the typical Western thing to go either or. But why not both and?
Right.
It's both. And so it's material and it's immaterial. It's a threshold thing, but not like the threshold, in my opinion, that that CERN is dabbling with. It's the subnature threshold that Rudolf Steiner talks very much about. In fact, I just finished an essay for that British magazine on magnetism and Ahriman and this subnature that we are subject to in a very peculiar, particular way in America, I might add. And I you'll definitely want to read that essay, Daniel. So anyway, that stomach clairvoyance that had been established in him through the electromagnetic masters who were running his mind control. Because when we think MKUltra, we right away think the head, but we really should also think the whole body, mm-hmm. especially where the chakras are. Because MKUltra is even now more highly sophisticated than it was then. And then it was considered very sophisticated for its era, which it was.
Right.
I think I, in the book also, I talk about Chapman, but I could name several other people who had the same reaction when they were entered by an entity. And was it electromagnetic or was it simply from some great clairvoyant capability? Because a lot of clairvoyance in the Dark Brotherhood category, they can do that. They can send waves with their consciousness.
No question. I think about something like the Exorcist movie, mm-hmm. and the incredible
One
impact.
My favorites.
It's remarkable. It's remarkable.
Very good. It's very good.
Yeah. But the impact it has in the 70s is interesting also, because, you know, there's a whole wave of people being aware of and more freaked out about evil. And at the same time, there's a strange thing in that movie where it's showing that, you know, in this case, an archaeologist, he's over there in the Middle East, and he sort of brings back the spirit, and then a young girl opens herself up with a Ouija board to it. So it's showing that these things exist on layers that aren't visible ordinarily, but they are, you know, for example, in certain Orthodox churches, they're very familiar with this kind of problem.
Yes, and I think today, the thing I'm trying to get at is not to provoke, you know, a lot of fear over evil, but to make clear that the technology needs both languages, the spiritual language and the physical language, in order to understand what we've got going here, because it's so powerful. And I don't think anyone would quibble about that. It obviously is. As to the ones using it, that's another level of, and the way I explain that level is, take for instance, some of these puppet leaders, where they seem to talk like automatic, and then when you catch them not really being aware of being filmed, you can see in the eyes, at least I've sort of trained myself over knowing about a dozen MK Ultras over in my life, and you can see the eyes sort of glass over, and now we're in the programming land, and they're receiving some sort of transmission. So I'm very aware of that, because I assume most of these leaders, you know, like the of the Governors Association, and then this Klaus Schwab leaders convocation training that they've all taken. I assume all of those are training programs. As is the one I really like is the one run by Raytheon called Women Who Code. It's a program, and what they're doing is taking young Girl Scouts, with their parents' blessing, oh, isn't this wonderful for my daughter's career? And they're taking them to these seminars where, yeah, sometimes it's just seminars. It is what it says it is. But there's a lot of time in that weekend in which I think some other things are probably going on. I think MK Ultra has become huge, huge. And some of it is programming, and some of it is hands-on programming, some of it is remote programming through what I call EMK Ultra, through electromagnetic programming with pulses. But it is the human being, certainly now media completely saturated with electronic media, is easily programmed. Hypnotic to the nth degree now.
Right.
And that to me, Daniel, is really the biggest problem, and why we have to admit that America has not been a democracy or even a democratic republic for a long time, for at least 50 years, I would say, since perhaps the television was sicked on us by the military. Because remember, all these technologies were military first.
Right.
And they were only given to the civilians when they were properly ready for their control mission over all of society. So that's kind of how I see it, and why with these invisible technologies that are at the atomic level are more wave than particle. Well, it indicates that we are at a spiritual level. You just have to change that word spiritual. You know, you could say another word, maybe invisible. No, that doesn't quite do it. I mean, you're going to need a word if you don't like the word spiritual, because spiritual is too much like religion. But it is that realm. It is that realm of the veil, the threshold coming down now. And many elements coming into our region here on the troposphere And we're taking in chemicals, electromagnetics, nanotechnology, synthetic biology, all of which are in the jurisdiction of alchemists. And they are alchemists. They are not just chemists or geneticists or this or that. They are alchemists. They know the ones who are members of brotherhoods like the Saturnalian Brotherhood at NASA that I talked about in the last book. They know about the occult dimension of these technologies. They know about Atlantis and how Atlantis went too far. They know that they are here again in order to bring this to proper fruition of planetary and solar system control is what I see. And that's why when Catherine brought up the secret space program along with Joseph, I was very, it went bingo for me. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. This is the umbrella under which all this is being done, because then you capture the visionary adolescent who is in most male and maybe female too, for all I know, astrophysicists, plasma physicists in the United States, and now everything they're doing is for this fantastic future, this Star Trek-y future, and there is no real interest in the human other right. than as an experimental guinea pig for that part
for Neuralink and things like that.
Yes.
Yeah. And the horrible experiments they're doing with monkeys on that one. Just unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember when D.H. Lawrence came to the United States. I always remember what he said. Great author, you know.
Yes.
Great, great author from Britain. And he went down to the Southwest, and he said that the American soul is a murderer.
Oh, wow.
So there's something about living in Ahriman's kingdom. I call America Ahriman's kingdom because of that north-south mountain range. I think I've mentioned this to you before because it's very important. From pole to pole, the only place in the world with this magnetic, mineral-rich mountain range all the way down, like the spine, like the backbone of planet Earth, and how the Europeans kept navigators' ships from coming to America until 1492 because the double here, the doppelganger, of this continent, these two continents, North and South, the Western Hemisphere, is so powerful that they feared for the very young then Christian impulse in Europe. They feared it would be completely wiped out if they allowed their people to come to these continents. The only ones who came here were the doctors of the era, the alchemists of the era, who wanted to figure out why the devil was so powerful here and what it had done to the peoples who populated these continents then. So, you know, to me, we all have to carry this excess burden of the Ahrimanic here. And for people who don't know the difference between Ahriman and Lucifer, it's just how Steiner bifurcated evil as the kind of evil that is here to help us develop. One being Ahriman, like Satan, sort of materialistic and cruel and hardened. And the Lucifer being the, you know, the fallen angel who expansive ideation, a completely opposite picture. And I think it makes sense in a plane of duality like the Earth is, that we all have to adjust to in many ways, that the evil would be seen not as a monochrome thing, but as two, as a polarity. And so, but it makes it so that you can, you have to be able to think your way through it. You can't just get a bunch of rules and say, yeah, now I'm safe. This, they change form all the time. And then there's a third level of evil, of course, which we are now dealing with. And that is the Asuras. And that's all Steiner cosmology.
Right. I mean, what's interesting about that is that Steiner talks about the incarnation of Ahriman in this period, sometime in this century. And the idea of the incarnation, you know, Ahriman, again, talking about being ahead of the game. Steiner's looking out there, 1920.
Really?
And he's seeing the 21st century.
Yes, he is.
It's remarkable. Really? And the Ahrimanic force he's attributing in the technology, and he's saying Ahriman's going to give everyone their own personal kind of clairvoyance. And you can see that, that they're moving into that with the smartphones.
Like the metaverse, yes?
Yes, absolutely. That's very much like the Eighth Sphere.
Yes, yes.
But the incarnation of Ahriman for a minute, let's talk about that, because Steiner says it's something that humanity needs to face. And we had an incarnation of Lucifer. The incarnation of Christ balanced out so many things for us. And here comes the Ahrimanic incarnation. And it seems like he's suggesting it's coming through the technology. That, yeah, that incarnation will, you know, so we think of a normal incarnation, we're thinking of a human being being incarnated through chosen individuals. This is a little different.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, Daniel, because there is, of course, an argument among Rudolf Steiner followers that they think that Ahriman is going to incarnate into one individual, just like Lucifer did. So you had Lucifer 3000 BC, then you had Christ. Now here we are, almost, you know, going into the third millennium, and now we're going to have Ahriman. And in my opinion, his advent is not only ahead of schedule, and just about everything that Steiner said about a lot of things has been ahead of schedule, because in the Ahrimanic, Ahriman likes to do things quick, quick and dirty. And so it has already begun, and it is the technology. And it makes sense to me, because Lucifer is a sort of, he's also the one who causes a certain individuality. It's the kind of individuality that's pretty shallow. We all know what it is. Like when we're 21 and we think we know everything, that's sort of right, a Luciferic moment. But Lucifer very much is the individual, may be taken too far. But Ahriman is more collective, is more more pulling us all down into the subnature. Subnature being this realm that the Mexicans definitely knew about, the Mayans, the Toltecs, they talked about the nine levels below that are the realms of evil, and they had the ball game going down there. And, you know, I have a lot of that in my Sub Rosa America series. And above us, above the earth plane, are the nine levels of the Archai, the angels, the Archai, the Seraphim, the Cherubim, all these old, what we think of now as medieval categories of divine beings. But we have, it's the same. And it's really interesting that the Mexican mysteries, they have the same thing. They have the nine up here and the nine down here. So there's some truth with that. There's the number nine, which is also very often mystical. So if we're here and now Ahriman's rolling out his technological wonderland, to me, his presence is everywhere, because it is, he has taken over this age. It's not a matter of in the future tense to me. It's already here.
Right.
And he has infiltrated it. So now he enters the body in a genetic way. Every aspect of what it is to be human will be entered by Ahriman. So that's our psychology, the music, the arts, everything is to be entered by Ahriman, including the genetics. And now what does he bring with him? This is my little bit. He brings the nanotechnology. He brings the nanobots. The nanobots, the little computer guys, the ones that are at the atomic level, that live near the threshold to the other worlds. These are his minions, and they love him. He's it. So when you watch The Matrix in that third film of The Matrix trilogy, and you see the machines that Neo must face and must redeem. I mean, now we get into the real meaning of Christianity as opposed to churchianity. The redemption of evil is something Rudolf Steiner talks again and again and again about. It's not a matter of cowering in the corner and hoping that the angel of death passes over me. Please, 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 make me safe, make me safe. No, it's a matter of redeeming evil so that you utterly transform it into good.
Interesting.
That's the true human end mission. And that's why we keep coming back. Some people say, Eli, you don't want to come back, do you? Yeah, I want to come back. Back to the very end. Very end, to the last one. I mean, yes, why would, I mean, this is the adventure to be here. But if you don't have the tools, if you don't have things like the tool of the idea of reincarnation, the tool of the idea of karma, the tool of the idea that spirit is everywhere, in everything, in everyone. If you don't have your toolkit, as a friend of mine in the 60s used to call it, your earth kit, if you don't have your earth kit really together, well, you're just going to do less than you could have done. Maybe right. I'll be nice about it.
Yeah, that is nice. You certainly miss an opportunity.
Oh, a huge opportunity. I mean, think about it, Daniel. We're here for this.
Right.
This is amazing. I didn't think I'd live long enough to be here for this. I knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. You know, in the 60s, we called it when the establishment went down. And in Europe, when I was living in Europe, in England, not Europe, when I was living in England, I'd say to my British friends, yeah, I have to go back to America to go down with the Titanic.
There is something about that. I feel very much the same way. I don't want to get out or run away. I want to be right here and take it off.
Oh, this is it. This is tremendously exciting and calls upon forces that we might not have used had things just gone quiescently.
Mm-hmm.
And just we're just sort of sliding into the mud heap, you know. Just
right.
But no, Ahriman has juiced it up, and the Asuras have juiced it up. So
yes,
you know, and if you in your Earth kit, if you don't have a concept of evil, if you're one of those silly people who says, "Oh, there's no evil; it's just ignorance," it's like, I'm sorry, that's really ignorant right there. So.
It's a catch 22, in fact. This is interesting, though. So the period that we've come into here and the politics around it, you know, there's one description I could give you, which is, let's say that, you know, the deep state is planning to install a planetary grid from space, control grid. I take that directly from your work. Is that a good extrapolation of what you're talking about?
Well, it's been done. The space fence is a done deal, and we are nodes. We are all little tiny nodes in it now. Yes.
Right. So at that point, I mean, this is something that the Nazis were thinking about achieving when they first set out on their space program and the rocket program that became our space program. So there's a long arc there. Involved in the middle of that is a CIA mission to create a UFO threat for emergency powers versus the actual UFO reality of something else being involved here. How does that play out? Because they're trying to, very awkwardly, push this forward with themselves as the great defenders against this thing. But people have become aware of this, and on one hand, they want people to become aware of it, but they don't want them to become too aware because it'll blow the threat aspect. What do you think, how does the UFO aspect fit into all this?
Well, you, to me, you are much more of an expert in this than I, so I can run through mine pretty quickly. First of all, the secret space program run by Nazis and their descendants. Mm-hmm. And to me, and then the CIA was completely set up by Reinhard Gehlen in the Eastern, from the Eastern Front. He was a card carrying Nazi. Oh, so, yeah. So the Third Reich is here, and all of this we owe to them, all of this technology and to their, I think what the American scientist adds is sort of a sort of steady obedience, given the requirement that they have security clearance, thanks to the terrible National Security Act of 1947 that basically made sure that the truth would never be allowed to see the light of day, but that a very small cotillion of conspirators would be able to control all this technology. Geoengineering, space, I mean, to me, geoengineering is the part that is here in the atmosphere, but it is completely run by the secret space program, along with all the plasma experiments, along with all the holograms, all of it. It's all, we owe it all to the Nazis.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I, you know, speaking of the terms, in the mystery schools and through the Steiner work of the eighth sphere, I've always seen a tie over with this, would you think a good modern description of the eighth sphere would be virtual reality?
Yeah, I think that does do it. The minus of it is that it'll make it sound all electromagnetic, but it isn't. It is also there are other dimensions involved in the eighth sphere. I assume a lot of the UFOs who make visitations here are probably from the eighth sphere, as Rudolf Steiner indicates.
Right.
He even says that. The problem is when we vacate our humanity, then something else enters, and then we are sort of dragged in a way into the eighth sphere. Or Ahriman can do that too. Right?
Yes.
Because Ahriman can make it sound like everything is just physical, it's just matter. But it's not really.
Yes. The idea of being Ahriman wants humans in that eighth sphere because it draws them away from the earth and allows them to be under his domain.
Eighth sphere is actually, it is limited to this realm. Even though it's invisible, it is right now I'm thinking of that drawing he has in the occult history of the 19th century. He has a drawing of the eighth sphere being this little sort of added on planet to the seven,
right
there, it's added on to the earth. So then they, he would, they would, we would be drawn into it in subnature, might would be the way I'd put it, the subnature earth, and it would be forever.
Right, subnature earth. Actually, that's a good point of departure on this, because you know what I see with this is very interesting, because I think if we understand the eighth sphere, which is something that Steiner said wasn't supposed to get out when it got out and had to come in and kind of correct it, because it was said in theosophy to be the moon, which I guess is a pretty major goof.
Yeah, that was a major goof. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or intentional misleading.
Yeah, right. Exactly. When I think about the eighth sphere in this period, I see that it seems like the goal there is to interrupt the natural spiritual evolutionary track so that we don't develop, in Steiner's cosmology, new Jupiter and things of this line.
Right.
And it keeps us in that eighth sphere track, so we think we're going into, it seems real, and we think we're going into a natural evolutionary track. So many people in society, just to bring the example down to everyday living, so it's kind of a caricature of progress.
Yeah, I think I have to bring in another element just to clarify for people who aren't familiar with Steiner. One of Steiner's great differences with theosophy, because he was involved with theosophy early on, is that he had a tremendous Christ experience when he was 38, I believe. And this Christ experience led him to reconsider Christ as to who and what he was. And so when we are talking about the eighth sphere, that may have to do with what I believe from Robert Powell's work, who's an a Steiner person. He was a mathematician by trade, and then he became an astronomer, and then he has an astrological timetable he set up regarding the second coming of Christ, and in his mind, it is an etheric second coming, as you can find in Acts, I don't remember, Acts 1, something, when Jesus says something, or the risen Christ says to his disciples, as you see me go, so shall I return, and then he kind of goes up into the clouds. And I've often wondered about this, Daniel, if this is why I've been so obsessed with engineering all these years, is coming in the clouds. So if Christ, the etheric Christ, and that's different from the physical, physical Jesus, it's not the same. If the etheric Christ is coming again into the earth, one level after subnature after another, which Robert Powell gives a timetable from 1932 in a Jupiter pulse of every 12 years, all the way to today, I think we're at the eighth level of subnature halfway through. And meanwhile, as the good is coming in and transforming the earth on an etheric level, the evil and Ahriman and the Asuras and whoever are in tremendous resistance to that. And so the eighth sphere is where there is no Christ. There is no transformation of the etheric. There is only virtual reality. There is only an electromagnetic, intangible semblance, simulation, you know, like the SWS program, what is that? Simulated world.
Yes, right.
Something, sentient world simulation. Yeah, right. That's it, the SWS. So that idea that you could, that Ahriman could have this kingdom of human souls captured that can then be used to, for incarnations of who knows who,
yes,
that then it would not be controlled by the divine world, the reincarnation process, but And even the death process would not be controlled by. So that's kind of how I see it, is that's its key, is there will be no Christ element there. And that, maybe that's sort of the idea being that, gee, if all else fails, we'll at least have the virtual world. We'll at least have the eighth sphere.
Right. We'll at least rule there.
Universe, yeah. Right? If yeah. we can't stop this Christ. And so evil, it's really an interesting map that Robert Powell gives of the timetable, that the evil has just gotten deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper every year of my life. I mean, you know, I was born in 47, so I've been here the whole time of practically. I mean, if it came, it started in 32 when Hitler entered chancellor office in 1933. And then in every 12 years in the Jupiter pulse, in its coming. And so to me, the second coming has already begun. So when Christians talk about the end times, I don't have anything to say, because yes, a time is ending, but not all time.
Right.
A time is ending and something is being born. And it would be that, you know, this may be exactly, Daniel, why I don't get depressed over this work. I very much know the fat lady has not sung yet, and yeah. that we'll just keep working, because there's every hope in the world that humanity will continue its evolution if those of us who know stand up and speak and stand for it as an example in our lives. Yeah.
No question. No question about it. And yeah, I think the work that you're doing, which is now merging in some of the deeper mystical strands with your scientific work, is a breakthrough. And I'd like to see, you know, I'd like to see other people take that task on, because you really have set a tone there where I think it's particularly in this book. And I think that that other piece of the vision is crucial now, because otherwise it's just working on a level of, oh, you know, we have authoritarian governments taking over. Here we are in the middle of a scientific dictatorship. It misses the spirit of the thing. And if you don't have the spirit of the thing, you won't know who you're up against.
That's right. It's like it's like being satisfied with operating with only one hand. I don't know why people, they've been conditioned. They've been programmed to think that's all poppycock, to think that we are so much further along than the ancients.
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
Superstitious ancients.
Yeah, I figure that out.
Wow. Incredible work, Ilana. And where can people go to get this remarkable geoengineered transhumanism book that you just put out?
Yes. So the version you would get at Amazon or through your booksellers, distributors, would be the black and white edition. It was really cost prohibitive, given the distributor that I went through, to do color editions in that. I apologize for that, but that's the way it is. But if you want a color edition, the Dr. Rudolf Steiner bookstore in Seattle, Washington, has very graciously taken on this task of shipping out the colored edition. And it's about $15 more than... without the shipping costs, about $15.
It's worth it. The color is very rich and interesting.
Yeah, and there are 60 illustrations. It really does help. And the book is 690 pages, I'm embarrassed to say. But, you know, I took a lot on, and I do feel that the book is like a good handbook for present era.
No question about it. It's remarkable and transformative work. It's great to have you back.
Yeah, Daniel, I always love being with you, because I can talk in different languages.
Exactly. Ilana, amazing information today. Of course, all of your work, including the new book,
is available at ilanafreeland.com. Our conversation continues at darkjournalist.com, and we'll have the full interview there shortly. Sign up for our newsletter to stay updated on all the latest shows, and join us Friday, March 18th at 8 p.m. Eastern as we kick off a two-part episode for the fourth anniversary of the X Steganography series. See you soon.